B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, the marriage sounds called a disrespectful and insulting the way the trade went down this September. Do you have any regrets about how that whole situation played out?
Yeah, look, Damaris is a great kid. I have a ton of respect for him. He's very professional and did everything we asked him to do. Our circumstances changed a couple times in that period leading up to when he was traded. And so I feel like I was always truthful with him, but things changed, and therefore what I said was not the same as what it was, what I'd said previously. So... yeah, it is what it is.
Gender-free Friday. Everything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to. That's one of the things we hit on yesterday. Fascinating. Demaryius Thomas rips the Patriots for trading him in the New York Daily News. And Bill Belichick is asked about it, and he actually responds and gives a good answer.
It was a good answer. I agree.
You know, it's like, part of me wants to say, Bill, is it really that hard? You see? There it is. Hey! There it is.
But no, it does. It proves he's capable of engaging on a human level.
Just, you know, question, answer. You didn't reveal state secrets. You didn't put your team at a competitive disadvantage. Someone asked you a real question. You gave a real answer. I thought you looked good in the answer. And it can be that way, you know. It's like, it's okay. Agenda Free Friday is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. But, you know, the whole thing about, I mean, screw Demaryius Thomas, as far as I'm concerned. Felt disrespected and all that. You know, come on. It's the NFL. It's a man's world. It's the way that league is. He knows it. We all should know it. To me, that's not the crux of the issue. The crux of the issue is, did they make a mistake trading him when they traded him? Is the crux of the issue. And two, why do you think Bill decided to answer that question?
Right, exactly. So look, I feel like they made a mistake. I said that, you know, early on. To me, to put that much stock in Antonio Brown to the point where in 11 days, the guy was here 11 days and it was tumultuous the whole time. Okay, so it's not as if things were peaceful at any one point and you said, well, I feel pretty good right now. We can let Demaryius Thomas go. That never happened. So they put a lot of eggs in one basket and it blew up in their face. To me, that is the definition of a mistake. My personal feeling as to why Bill answered it, and I can't say with certainty because I'm still shocked. I just said to you a second ago, I still can't believe he engaged on this. He never does. Someone calls Bill a liar and he's like, yeah, I'm just trying to do what's best for the team.
So why do you think he did?
I still think he is something about Demaryius Thomas, maybe as it relates to Josh McDaniels and Brady. They both wanted him here. They had relationships there. Or maybe he just likes Demaryius Thomas and thought he was a good guy.
He's making nice to Brady McDaniels.
Could be. Yeah, could be part of it. Could be part of it. Might not be a singular thing. But for him to say, I always thought I was truthful with him. I mean, typically someone calls Bill a liar and he doesn't have the time of day for those people. So it's like, screw you. I don't have to answer that because, I don't owe you anything. It felt to me like he felt he owed somebody something here to answer the question. And I would guess that it's some combination of McDaniels, Brady, and Demaryius Thomas.
What's your theory, Murray?
Well, the first part, the timing sucks because I do think that he should still be here. I think it's one of the things that's helped exacerbate the pissed offness of Tom Brady, the way he feels about the offense and not having veterans he can trust. So the timing sucks. Two, I don't know. The more I think about it, it's something you brought up yesterday. Maybe it has something to do with ownership because I think Belichick and Brady look at Antonio Brown being cut as an ownership decision. They still want him here. And a decision to have Antonio Brown on the roster over Demaryius Thomas, it's cold, but that's the business. That's the league. He's a better player. Tough pill to swallow, but it's understandable. But now that he's not here, Brown, I don't know, maybe it's the ulterior motive from Belichick here is him saying, well, Brown, we had to release him.
Wasn't circumstances changes.
Yeah, circumstances change.
But I didn't change him.
You know, so it's not really me. So I don't know if things worked out the way that he did. Again, my hands were tied. I would have you back because we don't have Brown now, but we don't. So I kind of feel a little bit bad about it.
I think it's something.
Something there with
too.
That.
Me too, because I think that just, and again, it doesn't time out perfectly because, again, they traded Demaryius Thomas while Antonio Brown was still here. But the whole situation exists, or at least the Patriots second guess does, because now both are gone. And that's Bill's way of saying, well, circumstances changed beyond my control. And he's sort of pointing to the fact that he didn't make that call. I think that's part of it, too.
Yeah, I still think you could have kept both.
Can I just say quickly that I think that he also wants to make nice with the players. I think this is important to him and them, that they don't get a bad reputation around the league.
Of course.
With players, you know, because you want players who want to choose here or take less money to come here, all those things. So you want to...
Well, they're definitely in the market for trades, right? So he doesn't want to look like a bad guy who's now going to be coming from, you know, Team X to here.
Right.
So.
We're not going to bring you on just to cut you a week later. You know, that's a bad reputation to have. So I think he's conscious of that too.
Now, it's not a money issue, but on some level, aren't they in the same thing with Michael Bennett? I mean, you brought me here and now you buried me. What the hell did you bring me here for? You told me I was going to play. Like, so what's the deal? What am I doing here? And so I think there's a significant part of that with Bill that he's got to be careful. In his mind, he does, because, you know, you bring guys in, you tell them they're going to make the team. Ben Watson's another one. I mean, how many different guys has that happened with in the last few months? If I were an agent, I'd be wary of, like, okay, Bill, you know, you're going to do to us what you did to Demaryius Thomas or to Ben Watson?
Okay, so that's on the table with everything else. Let's zip through some calls here before we get to Soucy. Here's Mike in Scituate on Joe Flacco. Yes, Mike.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to say one thing. Flacco's always driven me crazy. I mean, he's made millions of dollars and made a career, so God love him. But he's got one play. Incomplete, throw the ball as far as I can and get a PI call.
Jump.
And that strategy drives me crazy, but he's been the master at it.
Jump ball Joe. I've never liked him. I don't know how he played so well that one Super Bowl year, but I think he blows. He looks at one half of the field. He's like, look right, throw right. The only time he throws left is when he chucks it a million miles down the field left on a bomb, and then he hopes for a flag. Hit no internal clock. The thing last night was impossible to watch.
Murray, I thought, articulated it well or explained it well, which is that he looked like he didn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, he did. He looked like he just looked disinterested. He didn't want to be out there. And if I'm a teammate, I'm looking at him going, dude, you're the effing quarterback. Can you please show us some leadership? Show us that you want to compete. He was sleepwalking in that game.
Mike in Connecticut on Mahomes. Yes, Mike.
Yeah, hi, guys. The thing that concerns me about Mahomes is they're going to say he's going to be out for 4 weeks, right?
Yep.
Okay. Will Kansas City panic, try to rush him back and do this and ruin them the same way the Redskins ruined Robert Griffin?
It's a fair question. I mean, it's, you know, what he has is not an ACL, which is what Griffin had, but it's sort of along the same lines. Look, again, he's supposed to be 3-4 weeks. You play him in 7-8 weeks. I don't think you're going to see him. I mean, maybe cooler heads prevail out there. It feels to me like Andy Reid is, I mean, I wouldn't call him great because no one's great. We've just been over this. He's just another bum.
He'll be protective of Mahomes, though.
But they'll be protective of him. I think cooler heads will prevail out there, and they're not going to Robert Griffin him.
Reid has a conscience.
Yeah.
And I think this is universally, that's not fair, widely believed. Reid's a good guy. I mean, his heart's in the right place.
As opposed to the Redskins and Snyder and that whole thing?
Yeah, I just think Reed's going to be one of those guys that says, guys, we're not going to put the kid in danger here. And honestly, I'm just of the belief that a dislocated patella is not necessarily a horrible injury. That's just my two cents. That it's one of those things that what you worry about is the recurrence of it. If it happens over and over again, well, now you've got instability in the joint. You got to go in and fix it. Okay, but if it's a one-time, and I'm not sure it can be a one-time thing, so I'm no doctor. But I think you pop it back into place, you get swelling, and you got to keep him off it for a little while. You put a brace on there.
So when he's ready to go, do you play him?
I would. I'd play him. Now, again, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I don't know, but the Patriots game's almost 2 months away.
Yeah. So Bert Breer just tweeted, with the MRI showing no significant ligament damage, Chiefs believe Mahomes could actually have a shot to play before the bye. Casey's final game before the bye is against the Chargers in L.A. a month from today. That just feels fast.
So I'd hold him out of that. If they have a bye coming up after that, I wouldn't rush him back before the bye.
And don't you also to sort of assess what kind of season you're having?
Of course.
I mean, I wasn't that high on him before the injury. I thought they were done before the injury, right? I mean, and then they played Flacco. So all of a sudden, like, and that's just, that makes it even worse. That Kansas City defense blows.
I know it.
They suck. And Flacco couldn't get rid of the ball. He couldn't get in the end zone. Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
Did they finish? Was it eight? You said eight sacks? I thought they had more.
No, they had nine total because they brought in some other backup bum towards the end or for at least a couple of plays. And but they got Flacco eight times. I left that game feeling, how do they even have two wins?
I know, right?
They're awful. Their offensive line's bad, but Flacco's a mess.
And like, their defense is...
it's just whatever.
It's gone.
Yeah.
The team blows. You were right. Here's Andrew in Oxford. So, Andrew, Maz believes the Jets have a better chance of making the playoffs than the Celtics do of making the NBA Finals. Not winning the NBA Finals, making it. Your thoughts on that, Andrew?
Yeah, allow me to preface this by saying I think Maz is totally wrong, just like he was wrong about Giancarlo Stanton. By the way, they looked really good for him last night. Regardless, I think according to Odd Shark, the Jets are a plus 550 to make the playoffs. The Celtics are a plus 700 to reach the finals.
Woo!
So Vegas would agree with Maz.
Wow.
So, Andrew, see, I'm actually, this should tell you, this, give you some indication as to the level of my integrity. Those numbers you read, I bet were the Jets at the beginning of the year. They're not the Jets now.
Well, we're going to, just to let you know, we're going to get on the foremost handicapper here in the Boston area. He's going to give us the numbers. And I, anyway, am going to put my money where my mouth is and place a few units to benefit Christmas in the City and Jake Kennedy and our great friends at Christmas in the City for the Celts to make the NBA Finals. I think, and I've already seen some of the early numbers. Like, for example, someone, and again, it depends where you get it, but this guy says the Bucks are plus 120 to win the East. Philly is plus 160 to win the East.
Mm-hmm.
And the Celtics are plus 600.
Correct.
So it goes from 120, 160 to 600. And I think those three teams are pretty equal. So I think there's great.
Well, there's your mistake.
I think there's great value for the Celtics there. Great value. And the Bucks should be favored, but not by that much.
So basically what Vegas is telling you is that Milwaukee's chances of winning the East are five times better than the Celtics.
Yes, and I think that's way too high. I think they've overrated the Bucks and the Sixers, for sure the Sixers.
I don't.
Okay, so again, this is the beauty of it. You think one thing, I think the other, then we have a scoreboard, then we have a result, and then one of us goes, bleh, and then there you go. That's how this how the whole thing spins around the globe.
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
Coming up, we'll put our money where our mouth is on that. Bob Soucy next. Stick around.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Mad.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here we go, Bob.
It's time for Hot Sports Takes with Bob Soucy.
Pocket Rocket is here today. Scorching Bob Soucy and his hot, hot takes. Steaming Bob Soucy, sizzling Bob Soucy and his hot, hot takes.
Yeah! What to do when I like this?
Woo-hoo-hoo!
It's sweet.
Turn up the AC!
It's that time of the week. Hot Sports Takes with Bob Soucy, brought to you by Coors Light, the official beer. I don't want to laugh every time. The official beer of football Sundays. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Bob will have the call. Patriots, Jets, Monday night here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Hello, Roberto.
Hello, Michael.
How you doing? What's on your mind?
I'm feeling very large right now. And may I say that it's much better to be a big, small person than a small, big person.
Hello, Bob. At least you're the tallest little person. And not just another one of those little guys, as we were saying. Tell me what's on your mind. What's the lead Patriots story?
Lead Patriots story or the lead thought I had coming into the
lead
studio?
Lead thought you had coming into the studio.
Did you think it was like a 14-game minefield when those teams played in the 70s and 80s? I know there was a period of time when you mentioned the 80s in the NFC East. But go back to the 70s when you had the dynasties like the Cowboys in the NFC and the Steelers in the AFC. There were some god-awful teams back. There were three teams in each conference, basically.
That's
the Rams, the Vikings, the Cowboys.
I was talking about the 80s.
Then, all right, even in the 80s for a long stretch of time.
blows the crap out of the current field. It's not even close.
Yeah, I'll give you that. The quarterbacks and the head coaches, by and large, I mean, there were a lot more great head coaches.
And great teams.
And good teams. There were a few great teams in each league, but you know, those teams had their gimmies, too. Had their laps.
Some, not like this.
I mean, the NFC East in particular, and Parcells revived the – I mean, well, didn't even really revive them. I mean, you have to go back to the late 50s when the Giants were power. But
Bob, the AFC's a joke this year.
It's been a joke for 20 years.
It's true. It's
I mean,
a joke.
Really, but again, this is just what people have told me, and it turns out they've been right and I've been wrong. Yeah. You've been telling me for 20 years the Jets are a fraud. You were right. I was wrong. I'm foolish on that. I like John Elway. You told me he was nothing. You were right. I was wrong. So I just add it all up. You tell me who's been a worthy adversary. You've been telling me for 20 years that Manning's some choking dog. You're right. I've been wrong. So now add it all up. You've had no competition. So great. I mean, that's great luck for you, and you've taken advantage, mostly. But good God, I would love to have seen Parcells in the modern-day AFC East versus his NFC East. Wow. Wow, that would have been something.
You can't make an argument. I mean, you can't make a case that the AFC East today.
But anyway, I mean, I don't mean to go there. But if you're going to violate the statute of limitations on the John Elway discussion, then let's have the discussion. Let's open it up to what it's really all about. Then, but anyway, what's your lead thought on the Patriots this week?
Well, the lead thought with regards to the game on Monday is that it's a different Jets team by virtue of the return of Sam Darnold at quarterback and a lot of the guys on defense too. In the setting, I think it should be a much different kind of game. At least a competitive game, for sure.
Okay, so...
And I compared to week three.
No question. I still look at the coach, Tom. I mean, so, like, this is a good example of if the quarterback makes that big of a difference, you don't have much of a team. You know, but, I mean, be that as it may, if he's there, that's a better team. But that's the whole thing. There's been so many teams in the league this year, Bob. I've actually been heartened by the number of quarterbacks that have gone down and teams have remained competitive. That sort of renews my faith a little bit. Maybe they're not all bozos. You know, teams are still winning with a backup. That means you have a team, not just a quarterback. The Jets and Adam Gase, you know, if he makes that big of a difference, what does that say about everything else?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, Belichick said yesterday that he considers Adam Gase one of the best game planners they go against. Well, now Adam Gase can game plan with his full playbook because he couldn't do that with Luke Falk. I mean, he was just trying to guide Luke Falk, you know, through those 2-3 weeks that he had him as the quarterback. I know Falk had been with him in Miami and been on the practice squad for a couple of weeks, but that was his second NFL game. Second time he'd been in uniform in an NFL game, and he was starting against the Patriots in Foxborough. Not only that, he does have Thomas this week. He didn't have him in week three. They could get help as well at tight end. Then you look at the defense, and I think this is really the big thing for the Jets is their defense should be a lot better. Mosley says he's playing. He said that yesterday. I know they wanted to put him through individual drills today as a coaching staff to see if he'd be available. But you've got him, Quinnen Williams on the defensive line, Copeland's back on the defensive line from an early season suspension. The way they put pressure on the Cowboys, granted, you know, Dallas doesn't have the most innovative attack, but I thought that Greg Williams was able to do more. And I think those are two very good safeties they have. And now you put them with C.J. Mosley. It's a much different defense. And playing in the Meadowlands, I think the crowd will be amped up. They're optimistic about Darnold now. I mean, they're coming off a win. They're finally a win. That it's going to be a much different environment than the Patriots have been accustomed to for much of the time that I've been calling the games when we've gone into the Meadowlands as a crew, Zonai, and talked about the lack of excitement, the lack of buzz there. This will be a game, I think, similar to 2015 when the Jets beat the Patriots in overtime when Ryan Fitzpatrick threw that touchdown pass, I think, to Eric Decker in overtime to win that game. I'm not saying the same outcome, but I think it's going to be a similar environment.
See, I remember that game as Bill screwing up the coin toss. It's funny that you said that Ryan Fitzpatrick, I couldn't tell you how they scored to win that game. I think the Jets are better than they played so far, mostly because Darnold's been out. Their quarterback play has been inept.
Oh, but horrible.
Inept. And so I don't know if this kid's the next great thing or what, but after this Patriots game, their schedule starts to soften a lot. And I think the Jets are decent. I think they're pretty decent.
Bob, I know your thoughts on the officiating in the NFL. You want to hit on that?
Well, a couple of things that strike me about the officiating, and one of them is after watching games on Saturday being officiated at the college level. The last 6 years, a number that I came across, there have been 10 new referees in the NFL, and it started in 2014, when that year alone there were 14 new officials in the league. And so every year there has been this turnover of officials, including at the top. And, you know, you think about, for example, Monday night, it's Sean Hockley who's going to be officiating the referee for the Patriots and the Jets on Monday Night Football. And what I most vividly remember about Sean Hockley, and granted, it's one mistake, one game that he officiated, but he had a huge gaffe. I think it was a Stanford-Notre Dame game as a referee at the college level. And watching the games last Saturday, I started to think, who are the guys that and the women who are going into the developmental pipeline and becoming future NFL officials? And on top of that, with all this turnover, you have a change of leadership. And I think a lot of people have been, with good reason, very outspoken about Al Riveron. Then you have all the new rules, like the hand to the face rule, which in my time has been redefined at least once, maybe twice. The way illegal contact, pass interference is officiated and called, not called. Every year there are different points of emphasis. The number of times they've rewritten the catch rule in the time that I've been in the league, only 7 years. But I think you have all these factors combined, and the product on the field in the striped shirts is not good. And I think it starts at the top.
Okay, Bob, just give me a key to the game before you get out of here.
Key to the game, I think a key to this game is to protect Brady. The offensive line, you know, be on the same page. We're going to see with the tight ends Watson and Tomlinson what kind of difference they make. But I think Williams in this game is going to try to bring a lot of pressure. I think the Patriots will be able to contain. The Jets will be better offensively. But, you know, my concern in this game is what kind of pressure are the Jets going to bring? We've seen the Patriots' offensive line have some issues. They haven't been able to run the ball well consistently. So I think in this case, if you're Greg Williams, you're playing at home, you got the crowd making a lot of noise, trying to wreak havoc with that offensive line. You know, where are we coming from and who are we sending?
Okay. Bob with the call with Zolak Monday night here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We look forward to it. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you, guys.
See you, Bob. Man, we'll see you next Friday. Here's an update from Murray. We come back. I want to pick up on the officiating and talk of using a sky judge. Thoughts on this right after Murray's.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I think they understood that replay was not going to correct every instant replay or pass interference close call, that we're not over-officiating here, we're not trying to make it perfect, and we're not re-officiating these plays. So the thought process was to correct the obvious and clear error.
That's Goodell on the officiating at the NFL owners meetings this week. Big hue and cry about officiating, which is legit. Way too many flags. Emphasizing all sorts of new stuff. It's gumming up the games. We've all been over it. That Monday night game, Green Bay, Detroit was a debacle. Fake win by the Packers. We've had some fake wins across the league because of all these flags. And so, you know, it's coming to a head. And I wonder if last night was the beginning of the correction. 10 combined flags. A lot of these games, I don't know what the average across the league is, but a lot of the games I've been looking at have been like 18, 20, 21 accepted penalties, which doesn't even include the declined penalties. Last night was down to 10 accepted penalties, so I think that...
Oh, that's definitely a drop.
So is the arrow going to start to finally go in the other direction?
Let's hope so.
Are they over this thing where they're trying to clean up the game and now get back to just letting them play? Then there's this. The call for a quote-unquote sky judge. This was in Pro Football Talk yesterday or the day before. Former NFL referee John Perry never believed in the concept of a sky judge. He never did in the past, which is an extra official watching the game from a booth with a monitor in front of him. Then he watched Monday night's game, Green Bay-Detroit, from a booth with a monitor in front of him. Perry, who now works for ESPN, was highly critical of the mistakes made by the officiating crew during that Lions-Packers game, and he said on ESPN the next day that he's now in favor of a sky judge. Quote, let's embrace technology. I was not for a sky judge 2 weeks ago. At this point, I think we have to embrace technology and we have to find a way to fix the egregious error, Perry said. So this is basically in real time. It's not replay necessarily. It's the official is on mic, on headset with all the on-field guys. He's watching the game along with the on-field refs, and he's an official. and he just does it purely off the monitor and says, nope, incomplete, complete, put the ball here, put the ball there, bop, 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 bop. Rugby does this.
It's the AAF had it.
They goofed around with it in the AAF.
Right, that's right.
How do you feel about the sky judge?
It depends how it's used. I'm not totally against it. And I know, you know, I'll save you the words. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I know that you hate it.
Oh.
I don't totally hate it because I think there are occasions where the guy looking up there and go, oh, fellas, you get that one wrong. Just fix it now. Save the replay, all of it. Fix it now. And if it's bad enough, I think you could do that and it could be effective. But how they implement it is huge because, again, the last thing you need now is another layer.
Because, like, for all intents and purposes, the college game, to go back to Soce, has the Sky Judge. Everything's reviewable and it's all booth reviews. And they review the crap out of things. They're constantly reviewing things. And it's all, but they bring the ref over on the sideline. It's not the guy upstairs making the call. They bring the ref over. But that's, for all intents and purposes, a sky judge.
And the games last like 5 hours in college.
Your thoughts on the sky judge, Murray?
I don't want more replay. I get that they'll be able to fix things. I actually liked how the AAF was doing it, but no more. I hate replay as it is, and I want it all banished all from all sports, but we're too far down the rabbit hole with it, so I don't want any other additional replay, so no.
Oh, I hate it. You're right. Hate it. No. Stop. Don't you understand? Don't you get it? More replay, more eyes, more officials, more rules has not made it better. It's made it worse. You know, everything that happens that goes wrong on the field, they then overcompensate by making that reviewable or adding a new rule or adding a new official. And it doesn't make it better. It makes it worse. Every step of the way has made it worse, folks. And for the younger part of our demo, I keep saying this to you. To go back to when we were kids in the 80s or the 70s in the pre-replay environment. And so Maz and I, or guys of our age, know what it was like before and what it's like now. It is so much worse now. It's not even funny. And there were totally blown calls back in the 80s and, you know, before replay. There were blown calls. But there wasn't certainly the hue and cry. And there was more of a willingness to say, well, you know, that was part of the game. And that's, you lost and it sucked, but okay, so you didn't get the call. We didn't get the call. And then you moved on to the next game. And it's gotten, with every correction, every expanded use of replay, every expanded use of camera angles and sky judges and replay officials and rules and emphases, it's just gotten worse. And the sky judge would just make it worse. Trust me, it would just make it worse.
So look, I mean, I told you, I'm okay with going all the way back. I got no issue with that whatsoever. Unfortunately, we live in an era now where nobody can live with anybody's mistakes.
Exactly.
It's like, can you just keep going? Just keep playing.
Just
that's
keep
the deal.
Just keep going.
So, but given where we are, again, I don't even know. But the scary thing, though, is that I don't know that the other night would have qualified. So, you know, again, Trey Flowers put his hands on those guys' shoulder pads, stuck his hand in that neck area. That's getting close.
On the first one, they said it was the right call.
So, like, I look at now again, they said the second one wasn't.
Right.
They weren't that different, really, but whatever. So, I don't know that that's one that I want the sky judge intervening on. But the play and go back to the NFC Championship game, I'd like to have the sky judge intervene on that one.
But I know you would agree that that's not,
it won't happen that
way. It's a slippery slope. It's like, so you intervene on that NFC Championship game. Well, why don't you intervene on this? And if you intervene on this, why don't you intervene on that? And now you stepped in for that. Now, why won't you do this? We have the ability to correct the mistake. This is obviously a mistake. Why didn't you change this mistake? You changed that other mistake. And Twitter and your emojis and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it's this whole cesspool of crap.
Oh, it does. It gets worse and worse. Like that part of it, I don't disagree with. Unfortunately, it feels like it's got to be all or nothing. I like to think there's gray. Okay, I like to think there are spots where you can have someone intervene on something and make the right decision and everyone will get it, but that'll never, ever be the case.
But again, back in my day, a blown call used to be part of the game.
Yeah.
It was part of the game.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. Again, I lived with it. I grew up with it, as you did. So, like, and Murray did to an extent, too. Like, I'm okay with that. If that's the deal, like, you know, too bad. You get screwed. It sucks, but that's life.
Usually evens out. Usually does. Most of the time it evens out. You didn't get that one, you'll get the next one. And it does. It's just that's the way it worked. And you didn't have to, as we like to say, circumcise the mosquito on every play. It, bang, bang. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. And it sucks. It cost the Royals the World Series a year. What was the Dechinger call? Cost the Cardinals or the Royals?
No, it cost, I think it cost the
Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Cost the Cardinals. So sometimes there's
Don Dechinger. Yeah.
Sometimes there's a big one. But we have replay now, and the Saints got screwed. We have replay now, and the Lions got screwed the other night. It doesn't – replay has not
– eliminated the mistake.
Has not eliminated people getting screwed. It hasn't. And if you replay everything, it's still not going to end. People don't seem to get that. That it's still – you're still not going to get it right. Teams are still going to lose on bad calls or blown calls. And you just – you got to have to – like, it just have to – to me, the only solution is to wipe it all out and to try and go back to that day where it was just – it was part of the game. You got the calls or you didn't get the calls. And that's just the way it was.
I mean, I don't mind the whole part of the game thing. Again, I'm all for that. Because I think, you know, now this gets into a totally different discussion. But I think fans, competitors, all they've all gotten way too soft. Like, you want to get me going on millennials. Everything's got to be perfect or you can't fight through it. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, Agenda Free Friday. You can put the officials on there. Demaryius Thomas is on there. That wonderful Don Elway conversation that we had. You seem to enjoy that. We can take your thoughts on that as well. There was a Bruins take in there. Whatever you want. Agenda Free Friday and your calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go, on the Sports Hub app.
Here's third and four with Rodgers calmly retreating, looking for something. Flag is down as he throws to the end zone, incomplete.
Illegal use of hands, hands to the face, defense. Where?
That's he's on the left shoulder once again. On the left shoulder.
Two illegal hands to the face penalties in the second half for Trey Flowers.
And it shouldn't have been called tonight. Let's make sure we let America know that that's twice. The first time it cost him a sack. This time it cost him the game. When blown calls, when blatant calls cost teams football games, that's where we as players, the coaches, and even the fans in America, if we can see it, the officials should be able to see that. And I think that's why we're all a little bit disgruntled.
Okay, officiating on the table. Everything on the table. To your calls here on an agenda-free Friday. Thanks for hanging on. Here's Mike in Danvers on the Demaryius Thomas story. Yes, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you? Listen, you know what? So, Demaryius Thomas, too bad. All right, who cares what Demaryius Thomas thinks? Where was he before the season? You know, he's almost done, this guy. And you know what? Belichick is a psychologist. He's smart. And the reason he said what he said is because he knows very well they have to play them on Monday night. And if he can soften up Demaryius Thomas a little bit, then maybe he doesn't play as hard. So, in my opinion, that's what Bill is up to. Well, and Demaryius Thomas, stop crying. Stop.
So, I agree with all that. I mean, that's... You don't want to piss off a guy any further before the game, so that could have been part of his psychology. But I've seen it plenty of times where there's been opponents on another team that he's facing that week, and he doesn't do that. That was just a normal, honest response, like a human being, which is rare for him in that spot. And so the fact they're playing him this week is part of it, I would agree. And I would also agree, I don't care about Demaryius Thomas's feelings. I mean, shut up. Like, I don't care about that either.
I don't think we've focused on that part of it at all.
No. I think he's whatever. Like, I think he's soft. I think there's another example of it right there. The question is, should he still be on the team? I don't like him. I don't need the guy. I don't need him. But a lot of you were very excited about him when he was here. And now they've got nothing. Not only do they not have Antonio Brown, they don't have Demaryius Thomas. And now Josh Gordon, you're 0-3 on your questionable receivers. So is there a management problem in there? And it is fascinating that Bill chose to respond like a human being, which is kind of rare.
I mean, I'm still surprised that he engaged on the question. He never does that, which tells you that there was a reason he wanted to address it. And I think it's because, you know, there have been three different guys they brought in here that they probably said, you know, they told the agent or the player, yeah, we got a spot for you. Just sit tight. We'll make it work. And all three of them are basically gone. And that's, or you know, Watson's back, Ben Watson's back. But he wasn't happy when they shipped his ass out. They did it to Antonio Brown, admittedly, under different circumstances, and Demaryius Thomas. Bill's probably looking at it going, how am I going to be able to justify myself to agents and players when I go out there to get the next guy? I mean, to me, that's no small. I think Bill did the right thing by saying what he said the other day.
Bobby in Medford on the Bruins. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little pissed off here with what they're doing, the right wing. Like, how long do we have to see Carson Kuhlman, Brett Ritchie, and David Backes until somebody realizes that that's not enough for your second and third line right wing?
It's Brett, like, Ritchie. Such
they
a
needed
good
a trade in the offseason. I think Sweeney's a little bit of gun shy to make a roster move, which is obviously hurting them. And then quickly on the shootout last night, what are we doing not sending Bergeron out and we're sending out Charlie Coyle and Jake DeBrusque?
Bobby,
no goals.
Did you see some of those attempts too?
The Jake DeBrusque, he didn't even shoot the puck. He skated straight at the goalie and flipped it into his blocker. Like, what is that?
Some of those shots were not even shots. They were like little shovel passes. It was like
Marchand too.
Like, they kind of had a little mini stroke right before they went to shoot the puck. All of them, though, like, was there some sort of scouting report that you could beat him with off-speed pitches or something like this?
Good question, yeah.
Because all those attempts were unbelievable. Did you see Stamkos' goal?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he just whipped it into the corner.
Freaking ripped it. And you went up there, little mamby-pamby, little... like little touch passes right on the doorstep of Vasilevskiy. It's like, what the hell scouting report did you get on this guy?
I don't know. I felt like Marchand lost the puck a little. The other ones I can't speak to. Why DeBrusque was out there at all, you got me. I've said this a million times. I'll keep saying it. You know, Bergeron's a fair criticism because he's Bergeron. You could have him out there. I think McAvoy's awesome in the shootout.
Well, I think the first guy that went for Tampa was Hedman, their defenseman. So it's like, it's such a it's a fluky thing. Like, you know, the lineup for those things, you know, we could debate all day long. The attempts, there was a commonality to the Bruins attempts that said to me they must have had a scouting report, and oh boy, did they look like clowns on those
And none of them had any speed either.
Nothing.
They all went slow. Okay. Usually you see those guys come in fast. They want to get the goalie on his heels. None of those guys did that.
Okay, but the secondary scoring, the second line, it's all true. I mean, Coyle had one rush last night where he, you know, came around the corner, beat a guy on his backhand, and then missed the net totally. I didn't notice him the rest of the night. And so the right ring thing, Brett Ritchie and Carson Kuhlman, so right. So, I mean, here's a bright idea. Why don't you put Pastrnak with someone else and spread it out a little bit? I mean, why don't you try that?
Yeah, so look, I mean, I've always wanted him with Krejci. The other thing I would do, and I admit I'm eager to find out, that's part of it, but Bjork had a good preseason. Can you get him up from Providence? What the hell's Ritchie doing on the ice? So, look, Heinen played well, and I know Ty Anderson has made this point on our website. So, Heinen played well with that first line when he was out there. Why not put Heinen on the first line, put Pastrnak on the second line,
yes,
and bring up Bjork and put him with Coyle? Is that so tough? Is that so freaking tough? Can we try that? And then when you have the power play, you put your big guns together like everyone else does.
Exactly.
Why is that so hard?
Or if you're down a goal in the third and you want to put together the erection line, go ahead.
Get Bjork's ass up here because the guy's playing on the third line blow.
Here's Peter in Boston. Hi, Peter. I'm John Elway.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, listen, I got a couple of questions. So you say that John Elway in the 80s, what did he do in the 80s other than lose, what, three Super Bowls?
That shows you how good the league was, that John Elway had to wait that long to win a championship. Shows you how competitive and good that league was, that he didn't win for a long time.
You made the point that the 49ers, the only time they didn't make it is when they ran into the Giants.
Exactly. Like another great all-time team.
It's kind of like what we did, didn't we? We kind of ran into a freight train.
No.
I'm not sure about that part.
What freight train?
What freight trains have you lost to? You lost to a couple of fluky Giants teams. You didn't lose any great team.
See, he's missing the point. In the 80s. The Bears, the Niners, and the Giants all went 18-1. They all had 18-1 years, all three of them.
Elway was as good. If you're not old enough to remember him, he was as good as it gets, and he couldn't win because the league was too good. The competition was too good. As a player, I'm talking about. Elway, as an executive, you're right, I was wrong. He's another bozo. And when you think about it, it's just been 20 years of bozos. Like, what's been your competition? It's glaring. I mean, when you really think of it. And I don't mean to be digging on you. I know you take it that way.
Do.
I mean, a little bit, I guess, but I'm not making anything up. I mean, who's been the great all-time competition for you? Peyton Manning. There's been no other great coach for 20 years. For 20 freaking years, John Elway, when he was a quarterback, and he got his ass handed to him, but it was those great Parcells Giants teams or that, you know, the Redskins who won with three different quarterbacks. You know how hard that is? Parcells won with his backup quarterback. Gibbs won with three different quarterbacks. Those are all-time teams and all-time coaches and all-time programs. You've gotten past the Jets and the Broncos, and I believed in those outfits. Boy, was I an idiot. But you were right. You were right. No competition. Nick and Lawrence. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, so you need to factor in with this
with the errors, the contracts and free agency. It's way different now because, you know, the Patriots, they have to turn over the roster, you know.
Yeah, let me tell you something, Nick, that if Bill Walsh had to figure out a salary cap, he would have figured it out because he was brilliant. He was tremendous.
Okay, but you said Bill Parcells would, too, because he was brilliant. But after 1990, he only had four seasons with double-digit wins and three losing seasons. And four of his other 11 seasons were just around 500. Belichick's only had two seasons where he didn't have double-digit wins since 2000.
So what was the first year of the salary cap? I think it was 93? 92, 93, was it in that era? It was the early 90s, I think, was the first year of the salary cap.
Sounds right.
Bill had a good run without the salary cap with the Cleveland Browns. How'd that go? So Bill, so you forget, was a head coach right around that era when he was in that era when the league was really competitive. And how'd it look there in Cleveland? It's okay. I mean, it wasn't that hot.
I watched a documentary that said he won three titles in Cleveland. Right. With the Ravens. Browns 96.
Right. If you go back and watch the NFL Network special, his Cleveland years, they actually won three.
Drafted Ray Lewis.
And set up the fourth. Right?
Yeah. He was responsible for Ray Lewis. Yeah, that's right.
It's okay. It's okay. The league is wretched, and you took advantage of it.
1994 was the first year of this NFL salary cap.
But just don't leave out that first part. Just don't leave out the first part. Back to your phones after 90 seconds of an update from...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.